Welcome to Pull Up and Pour, the podcast where you pull up just as you are, pour whatever's in your glass and heart, and join the conversation. This is your happy hour without the pressure, a space for real stories, real laughs, and real talk. Whether it's wine, water, or a mocktail in your glass, what matters most is that you're willing to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Because here we say it, we sip it, and we share it. In this space, connection flows best when everyone's welcome. So pull up, get comfortable, and let's pour into some conversation. Hello, 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 and welcome to Pull Up and Pour. Today, we are here with Lewis, okay? Lewis, actually, let me just tell you a little bit about the name of this episode. I cannot wait. And the name of it is actually called Change Through Perseverance, okay? Kicking addiction in the S in winning. Okay. And I'm so proud of Lewis. So very proud of him. And I just want to tell you a little bit about him, and then I will let him be able to talk to you even more about, you know, kind of who he is, and we'll get down to the nitty gritty and we'll ask, you know, all types of questions. So Lewis is actually currently, he is a dedicated professional, healthcare professional. He actually has had several years, you know, as a licensed or registered dental assistant. And here lately, within the past few years, I'd say, what is it, 2 years, Lewis? 2 years, maybe?
2 years.
Cool. 2 years, okay. Lewis has continued his lifelong passion with healthcare and has now segued in from the dentistry industry now into a RN, where he is completing his RN license and actually today took his last exam. So we are happy about that, you know,
hope
very much success. Lewis, I'm going to turn this over to you, and I'm going to ask you to give a little bit of more detail about you and where you're from and so forth. I know where you're from. I've known Lewis for a while, but, you know, I'm going to let him kind of tell you that. I have a little bit of bio here, but I think it probably will come a little bit easier if it came directly from his mouth. So, Lewis, go ahead. Take it away. Tell everybody about who you are and your fabulous self.
Thank you. How's everybody doing? My name is Lewis. I'm originally from a very small town called Lawrenceville, New Jersey, which is just north of Trenton, our state's capital, and right before Princeton. So it's kind of in the middle. And I lived there for about 43 years. And then I left there and came down to Blackwood, New Jersey. And I'm still down in Blackwood now. Like I said, you should mention I'm finishing nursing school. Just got my last exam done today and hoping to be starting in the hospital by early June. So I actually came down here to go to school. And that's one goal down, one goal fulfilled. So just waiting for my state test and my license and everything else. And it's good. Life is good down here in Blackwood. I'm enjoying it. I'm closer to lots of friends in Philadelphia and friends in the DMV area, but I'm also not very, very far from home. So when something arises, I can always shoot back home and shoot right back. Me and 295 are like this now. We're good friends. So things are good. And I got no complaints. And I want to thank you for having me. I do appreciate it very, very much. It's not often that I get a chance to share and talk about my journey, and it's very therapeutic, and it's a very good reminder for me of where I came from, so that I can plan to go forward in the future without forgetting the past. So those who don't revisit the past are kind of doomed to repeat it, or whatever the saying is. But you always have to remember, so you can reflect and, you know, make better decisions in the future. So thank you very much for having me, is what I was getting at.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is a pleasure to have you here. And I'm glad that you accepted the invite. So we are going to get into it. Okay.
Right.
So someone were to meet you right now, just today, Lewis. Okay. If someone met you today, they would never guess your story. Okay. In terms of just seeing you and how you are now, they would never guess your story. What's the part of your journey would people find the hardest, do you think, to believe?
I think people find the hardest to believe. Some people are so amazed when I tell them that I don't drink alcohol. That is the funniest part about it at all. I'm in nursing school. So there's a lot of students and a lot of students, you know, it's stressful. They want to go and they want to hang out and they want to have a good time after exams or clinicals. And I say, sure, you know, I'll come, or maybe where are we going? And, you know, I may say, well, I don't drink. So, you know, that's not a problem for me if we need a designated driver. And people just seem to be so amazed. A lot of people find it hard to believe that I do not drink in general. Which I don't find funny, because I know that drinking is a very popular social pastime. It just does not work for me. I think if anything else about my journey, people would find hard to believe. I think a lot of people find it, how do I put it? There's a stigma. There's sometimes a stigma attached with drinking that, especially with men, if you don't lose your job, you don't really have a problem. And some people find, when I, you know, tell them that I didn't lose a job before I stopped drinking. I didn't. Thank God I had the passion to say, you know, what I had went through was enough. And it was headed toward that. So I decided to get off the train before it actually derailed, if that makes sense. But mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of people find it like they have this misconception that you have to be on the corner with a brown bag standing in front of a liquor store before things get so bad for you to realize that you have a problem, or that you wouldn't realize that you have a problem. And I didn't have to go through any of that. And I'm thankful. I'm thankful for that every day. I'm thankful for that every day. And so I think a lot of people are really, 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 really puzzled by that. They're like, you had a problem with alcohol? And I, you know, and yeah, you'd be surprised. It affects a lot more people than you know.
Now, take us back. When did alcohol first enter your life? How did it start versus how it has ended up?
Sure. Let me hold on. Does this pull up the cork? It's going to be a long one.
Yes. Normally, I would typically have my wine, but right now, I just have some water. So, in solidarity.
The taste buds and the vocal cords. So, alcohol came into my life when I was 18. I was 18 years old when I took my first drink, and I was 34 years old when I took my last, and I will never forget those years. But I was 18 years old when I took my first drink, and I didn't mean for anything to spiral out of control. I think a lot of children, a lot of teenagers experiment with alcohol. It's not something that was so, and I was actually late to the party, believe it or not. I remember it was halfway through my senior year of high school, and I got invited to a weekend kegger, which was normal practice. You know, somebody's parents were out of town. We find somebody's house. We go get some drinks and, you know, we chill out. And I just took it a little bit further than other people did. And it progressed that way every single time following it. Both of my parents drank. Let me say that. Both of my parents drank. I wouldn't say chronic alcoholism like I did, but they both drank. They had beers. You know, they would drink a little bit of liquor here and there every once in a while. Nobody was stumbling around drunk all the time, but they both drank. And they always told us as kids, like, you know, when you're older and things of that nature. So I think there was a curiosity there always. I was working when I was 18. I was working my way through high school, and I had a job, and I was getting, my grades were fine, and I was graduating on time. I had bought myself a car. So, you know, the conceptual, I can handle this. I got a little responsibility under my belt. This should be no different. And I kind of just got involved in it that way. It started off as a social thing on the weekends with some high school classmates. And then it started to develop into something that was happening during the week, maybe on Fridays at first, but then just, you know, all of throughout the week in general. I would say probably close to the last semester of high school, there were days I would go to school with hangovers because I had been partying. I've always been the type of person to enjoy the company of older people. And so I hung out with people that were a little bit older than me, and they were of age to drink. So I would hang with them and I would drink. And, you know, it was one of these things where it was like, well, you know I'm going to graduate, so it's not really a big deal. I was responsible enough to take enough credits each semester so that I never had to worry about whether or not I would graduate. It was just when the time had come to graduate. So it kind of slowly developed, but it started definitely when I was 18. And I would say it became really, really problematic when I hit 21, because when I hit 21, the chains were off. I was of legal age to drink, so I wasn't relying on anybody to go to the liquor store. I wasn't relying on, oh, I have to buy you something. If you buy me something, there was no bargaining. I was able to actually go to the liquor store myself or go to the bar myself. And, you know, it's kind of like anything else. When you open up a new dimension of something, you know, it opens up a whole new thing of possibilities. No longer was I confined to just drinking in the house. Now I could go to the bars and drink. I could go to the liquor stores by myself after work. And all types of things. So more access just led to more trouble.
Right. So was there a moment, like a specific moment that you can pinpoint when you said to yourself, you know what, I'm not in control of this. Like, this is not who I want to be, you know, and, you know, what did that look like, you know, for you?
I was 34 years old and I was working for a job in Hamilton. And by this point, things had gotten really, really bad. Things had got really, really bad. But like I said earlier, a lot of times as men, excuse me, we tend to think that unless our livelihood is threatened, we don't have a problem. And I was holding mine together. I had a job and I had a really good job. I was working for a pediatric dental office and I was supervising their whole pediatric department. The signs were there, but I was able to go to work and work like a workhorse. Of course, driven by the idea of when I get done, I'm going to go home and get smashed. So working was never a problem for me. I had already had the alcohol mindset of you have to work to enjoy what you enjoy doing. The alcohol is not free. It's actually quite expensive. Mm-hmm. And they had gotten, I was deemed what they call a once a monther, somebody who misses work once a month. And it's patterned. It's problematic and it's patterned. So I would always miss Monday. Monday was my day to miss because it was a struggle on Sunday to try to either drink just enough so I didn't have a really bad Monday, or that would get out of control. And then in Mondays would be a really, really, really bad day because I was hungover and I was tired and I was exhausted, or not drink at all on Sunday. And then I'm waking up all shaky and out of sorts from withdrawals on Monday.
You were able to maintain, for the most part, to the outside, the average outside world.
So I thought they knew. I heard the whispers. I saw how people started treating me differently. And, you know, it burned at first. But looking back now from a clear mind, I don't blame them. But I saw how things were starting to crumble. But I woke up and it was a Friday. I went to work on a Friday. I had a half a day. Got in there, did my work. I left. And as soon as I got home, the party started. And before you knew it, Friday had turned into Saturday and turned into Sunday. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to work on Monday. They'll be OK. They'll get through. I called out on Sunday. And so the point for me that sticks out the most is I was getting up Tuesday morning to go back to work because I wasn't going on Monday. And I woke up extra early and I said, you know, I'm going to take a bath because I felt really, really dirty. And I felt remorse. I felt bad about not going to work. You know, they rely on me and, you know, you're not there. So I said, I'm going to take a bath because I probably smell like alcohol because I was drinking so much over the weekend and, you know, just not taking a break. And I remember laying in the bathtub and I remember my leg kind of jerking out of nowhere. And it scared me. It scared me because it was something that had never happened before. I didn't know what it was. But I said to myself, well, you get shaky hands. And I always knew from working in the medical field that alcohol withdrawals can cause tremors or seizures. So when that happened, I jumped up out of the tub. I took a shower. I got dressed and I went to work. And I figured they were going to say something to me because I know from experience, not experience, just from hearing around. Well, actually, no experience from seeing it happen to other people, that at that same job, that they have to offer you some type of help before they just get rid of you. And so when they came to me and they said, you know, we see this pattern and it's starting to become problematic. Do you think you might have a problem? For some reason, I said yes. And it was like there was a weight that was lifted off of my soul. I had never said it to anybody before. I had never told anybody that I thought I had a problem. If I did, I made light of it, you know, things of that nature. I kind of brushed it off. But when they said, do you have a problem? I said yes. And I said to them, I said, if it was bad before, and I'm going to say this was, I was 34, so I had lost my mother when I was 25. And I said, if it was bad before when my mother was alive, it's really, really worse now that she's gone. Not to try to scapegoat that off on her, but you deal with grief in different ways. It manifests in different ways. And so, you know, that had become a little bit of a relief for me. And I said, yes. And so it's definitely worse. And I left there. And they were nice enough to get somebody to give me a ride home. They didn't tell me to go catch the bus because I didn't have a license by this time. I didn't have a car. And they gave me a ride home and I started very basic. I called the 1-800 number on the back of my insurance card and said, look, I need help with substance abuse. And they told me, you know, they asked how much had you been drinking? And I told them, and they were concerned that what I had was a seizure. And they said, you know, you might actually want to have another drink just for your own safety. But I had pretty much come to the realization from the scare of that morning to what I was going through with work to just everything coming to a head. And I said, no, I'm going to be fine. I'm just going to ride this one out. And I've never turned back. And I've never turned back since that day. That was when I was 34. I'm 51 now.
That is amazing. That is amazing. And that's why I wanted you to come on this show, because I wanted to just share your testimony and to show that, you know, this is possible.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously this was, you know, perseverance that you had to persevere to get to where you are. But this is possible. And there really is light on the other side of the tunnel with this. So, and going through this and at this time, looking back, was there anything that you would say your addiction cost you, being friendship wise or emotionally or mentally? You know, what some costs? And on top of that, were you able to kind of come back from that, like mend friendships, or were there certain friendships that you just had to let go? Because we all know not everybody is meant to go
the distance
into your next phase of life. Some
yes.
people, they are where they are, and that's where they are. In fact, many times when you split, they have to have their own journey
yes.
themselves. You
that
know
part.
What I'm saying?
That
you
part.
Know, it doesn't mean that you love them any less. You just have to love afar, in a sense, because you are taking care of and looking after yourself. So did you find that to be true, of having to kind of distance and just say, you know what, I love you, but I've got to take care of me?
Okay, so the first part, I missed time. I missed lots of time. Had I not had the struggles that I had with alcohol and knowing what I know now, I would have started school a lot sooner. That was a big deterrent. That was a reason that I didn't go. Because, you know, things were fine. And really, the underlying factor there was, as long as I was paying my bills and I wasn't homeless and I could still drink all the time, everything was fine. It
mm-hmm.
wasn't until later that I said, okay, you know what, you're going to need to go back to school. So I missed a lot of time. I missed a lot of events. I missed social events. I missed weddings. I missed funerals. I missed birthdays, all behind just sitting in the house and getting tanked up and getting drunk. So I missed a lot of those things. As far as the friendships, that's a catch 22. It's kind of like a catch 22. It's easy to say anybody who is your real friend will understand what you're going through and they will support you no matter what. But some people, I would say, they may not be as sensitive to the fact that you have a problem with alcohol. And so what they teach you in the program, which is really the most, to me, one of the most important fundamental steps, is that the three P's, well, not the three P's, but people, places, and things. Not the three
mm-hmm.
P's. I'm thinking about something from nursing. Sorry. People, places, things. One of the big things that I had to realize when I finally started to get sober and realize that I have a problem and deal with it hands-on is that not everybody has a problem. It's me. I'm not alone in this problem, but not everybody shares it. So it's not really fair of me to expect everyone to alter their life and change things that they do. If some people can drink and they can drink non-problematically, hats off to you. It's just not something that I can do. And so I don't expect you to change what you do, what keeps you comfortable. It falls on me to say this is something that I can't be around. And what I would say also is that I'm fortunate in the fact that I was able to step away from some things when I was actively working steps and going through the program, getting myself back on track. But the people that I consider my real friends, when I came back, they were still there and I was still welcome with open arms. And that's how you know who your real friends are. You know, sometimes I have to say, sometimes if you want to see if somebody is your real friend, if they really treasure you and value, sometimes you leave them alone. If you go away for a while and when you come back, things are still good and they reach out if you're not around, then that's a solid friendship. You know, it's lasted over the years. I don't throw the word friend around lightly. If somebody is my friend, they have supported me at a time when I was bad. They have cheered me on at a time when I was doing good. We've shared some type of a experience where we've been there for each other. So it's not, what's that saying I always say? It's not a boomerang. The word friend is not a boomerang. It's a frisbee. You throw it, somebody has to be there to catch it and throw it back. It's not like you throw it and it just comes back to you. And luckily for me, I have friends who have understood what I was going through. And you, example for one of them, I come to your events, you always make sure there's plenty of non-alcoholic beverages, or I come early. And, you know, if I say, you know, hey, I got to go at a certain time, it's never up. You can do that. People understand. And so I'm blessed in the fact that I haven't missed much. I've missed some things, but I haven't missed much. And once you get yourself on track and you are able to articulate and apologize, because there's a lot of apologizing I had to go on in my journey. You know, there were some people I had to reach out to and say, look, I did some things. I was sorry, you know, and please forgive me. And once you mend those bridges, you can, and you're welcome back. Everything works fine. So I was fortunate. I haven't missed a lot of anything. There were no friendships I lost behind alcohol, but there were friendships that I saw weren't worth keeping once I stopped drinking alcohol, if that makes sense. I saw things differently. And I made the decision to say, this is something that's not good for me. And I don't need to partake in that anymore. I always ask myself, excuse me, when something ends, has the quality of your life really decreased that much since it's gone? And if it hasn't, you never needed it. And if it has, then, you know, it's worth the conversation. But if it hasn't, let it go. And luckily, the people I call my friends are real friends and they support me. And I haven't had any problems that I can say, like I said, not behind the drinking, but the friendships that I did end up losing, it was once my mind was clear and I could see, okay, maybe this is just not a good situation for me. And there was very, very minimal amount of those.
What was the hardest part for you when it came to choosing your sobriety in the very beginning? I mean, obviously, you know, the drinking piece of that's a given, but was there anything else, a part of you, a part of who you are, that you may have thought that once you become sober may not be there?
There wasn't any one thing specifically. I think the problem was the drinking had become so regular that it kind of got buried up here, that was just the way things were supposed to be. I think a lot of people I won't speak for everybody, but I know with me, it seemed like, how do I put it? It would be this big drastic change. And the funny part was that it wasn't. You kind of forget when you're so wrapped up with it. You kind of forget there was a time when you didn't drink and life was fine, arguably better. But you get so wrapped up in what you're doing that you can't see life without it. And so that's always scary, right? That's always scary. It's because it's like it's this huge change. And how am I going to deal with it? And what's going to be different? And a lot of times complacency slips in. And when you combine complacency with addiction, it's just a recipe for just stay where you are, because you have something that you're hooked on that's keeping you there. It's like, this is a good reason to stay. You don't want to leave me. But, you know, I forgot that, you know, there was a time, you know, Lewis, when you didn't drink. There was a time when you were 17 and 16 and you had just as much fun as you're having, you know, when you get drunk, and it's cheaper and you're not waking up with headaches and shaky hands and you're not losing your license and having to pay all this money to get it back. And, you know, you had a car and all of these other things. And so what you have to do is it's tough, especially in the state of New Jersey. Like, you know, you lose your license or you lose something substantial behind alcohol, they do not make it easy to get it back. But that's where the joy comes in. And that's where the amazement comes in. You work to get your life back on track and you work to get what you've lost and you appreciate it more. And then you work to maintain it and sustain it. So I think that's probably been like one of the best things about it. But yeah, it's tough at first. It's tough.
Excuse me just one second.
Sure,
I'm sorry.
Sure.
Give me just one second. So sorry. Hold on.
No apology needed.
You should take it. Stand over there. Go stand over there. Go stand over there.
I'm so sorry.
No apology necessary.
I'm so sorry, anybody who is out there listening. My mom has dementia, and she happened to come into the room with her jacket on. I don't know where she thought she was going, but if you see any disturbances or anything like that, I sometimes have to take a break and sometimes in the middle just to kind of make sure that things are as they are supposed to be. So back with what we were saying, okay? So we were talking about, you were describing, we talked about in terms of like, you talked about things that had to kind of go away, you know? Yeah. No, okay. And so in order to rebuild your life, what habits or routines, you know, kind of helped you to rebuild? I remember, and this is just me, you know, looking back just a few years, I remember you were like heavily in the gym and yeah, you know, and all that. So you say that was something that really helped you?
Yeah. So, you know, when you give things up that take up lots of time, you find joy in new things. And I had put on a lot of weight from drinking. And so I definitely wanted to join the gym to get some of that weight off. But in the beginning, yes, I did do all of the things that they teach you in the program. I avoided bars because there was you know, always the temptation, or until you become really, really strong enough. And even then, sometimes, depending on the person, you may want to still avoid bars. But I avoided bars. I avoided driving past liquor stores when I got my license at first, until it got to a point where I felt comfortable enough and strong enough to say, I can drive past this without being tempted to stop or go to one, things of that nature. Always, like I said, always the people, places, and the things, you know, always the people, places, and the things. But yeah, I did some of that stuff. Like I would drive around the liquor stores that I went to. I remember it was so funny. I went to a liquor store one time. This was like years after I was sober. I went to a liquor store and I think I was there picking someone up. And I saw a woman that I used to see there all the time. And what happened? I think she must have been good and tipsy, because I saw her and I said, hey, how are you doing? And I still speak to you, but I say, hey, how are you doing? And she said, hey, I'm fine. How are you? And I said, I'm good. She said, I haven't seen you for a while. And I said, yeah, I hadn't been in so many years. And I would stop there every day after work. And she said, yeah, it seems like I haven't seen you. What's it been, about a week or so? And I laughed so hard. I said, I haven't been in that liquor store in about 3 or 4 years. So I had a chuckle off of that. But I say it was one of those things that just reminded me, like, the time you lose. And, you know, thank God I wasn't doing it anymore. And I just wished her well and I wished her the best. But yes, so, like I said, the people, places, and the things, because I'm getting off track, are the most important things. And you want to make sure, I would recommend that until you have probably a good amount of time under your belt and you have picked up new habits to replace your old habits, that it's, you know, it's going to be less of an issue. Because like I said, alcohol is going to be, you know, I can't avoid it any more than I can avoid air. You know, not everybody has a problem, and it's a very profitable industry. So I don't expect it to just go away because I have a problem with it. It's understanding that I have a problem with it and that I have to stay away from it, if that makes any sense.
So in addition to the working out, how did you deal with any triggers or cravings or any moments of weakness? Or did you find that that did not really happen for you?
No, I did meetings. I did meetings. And meetings are good. Meetings are very, very good, because like I said, if you're going to ever get away, not say you can't really get away from your past, but if you don't want to revisit it, you have to acknowledge it. That's a very important part of it. You can't just say, I stopped drinking and everything bad I did goes away. You can't stop drinking and say, case in point, somebody asked me the other day, I was talking to somebody and they said, you still consider yourself an alcoholic? And I said, yes, always, always, always. I could stop. And I'm almost, I believe it's 18 or 19 years sober now. It could all go away tomorrow like that. If you don't, that's why I was so thankful when you asked me to do this, because I said it could go away like this tomorrow. If you ever get too comfortable, you know, and you don't watch what you're doing. I've heard stories in those halls of people saying, you know, I was at a party and then I turned around the next minute and I had a shot in my hand and really couldn't remember how we got there, because it's just, you slip back into old habits. So you have to have like reinforcements. I really didn't have a lot of triggers, to be honest with you, because I never really needed a trigger to drink. It was something that I just looked forward to doing and doing frequently from the moment I woke up in the morning, 6 o'clock some days, until late in the night or when I passed out. So I never really had specific triggers. And after, how I put it, I've always been the type of person from a young age where I have a very, what is the word? I have a very one-sided personality. Either I do something and I do it hard, or I don't do it at all. And my parents just tell me, you're so hard-headed, because it was very hard to get me to change things, especially people tell me that now. But I either do things hard or I don't do them at all. So when I decided to stop drinking, it was positive reinforcement, vocal reinforcement. When people ask you, no, I don't drink. And saying that every time, not I used to drink, not I have a problem, I don't drink. And just making that a lifestyle. Like I said, everything with change, I don't like to say I make changes. I like to say I make lifestyle changes. If that makes sense. Like if I don't do a diet, yeah, I don't absolutely. Do a diet. I do a lifestyle change. I change the way that I work out now. It's a lifestyle and you have to keep it going. Because like I said, you practice new habits and then new habits take the place of the old habits. So you replace those negative habits with positive habits. And you'll find, or I should say I find, that I had a lot more free time when I wasn't drinking anymore. You know what I mean? I can remember the first time I went to the mall and I wasn't drunk. And it was like, they have all these stores. Wow. You know, it's crazy, you know, and there's only one. I don't see three expresses now. But, you know, and you can laugh at yourself. You know, when you get comfortable, when you look at some of the stuff that I did, it was funny. So it's like, yes. But yes, new habits take the place of old habits. And just it's always just making sure that they're positive habits that you can tolerate, and you can tolerate and enjoy safely, because it's different for everybody. Alcoholism is different for everyone. We do not all have the same relationship with alcohol, which is why some people are alcoholics and why some people are not. So it's a very different relationship for everybody. Find where you fit is my message to anyone who might be struggling. Find where you fit in and look at yourself and make the changes that you need to make so that you can get back to a place that's good. That's the message I would send about
that. So let me ask you this then, touching on that. So there is also a theory, you know, and, you know, I guess, you know, people, I mean, you have, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous or AA, but there's also a theory, you know, that people don't necessarily need that you can drink, you know, or take a sip and you not go back down, you know, down that slippery slope. Okay. Do you think that is realistic and that's really true? Or do you feel that no, when you are an alcoholic, to keep from spiraling, you need to kind of completely cut it out? Or do you believe that it is possible that you do have some people who are able to have that one shot or have that one, glass of wine, and yet things not go that way?
Heard stories. And I've heard, you know, people say that, you know, they were having a rough time with alcohol and they stopped. And then they went back after, you know, some years and everything was fine. And now they just drink socially and things of that nature. So I'm the type of person where I say I can't see the future. Otherwise, I'd be rich selling tarot cards. But I can't see the future. I don't know. Everybody's relationship is different. I know that for me, that would not be the case. Because if I've ever had a situation, especially early in my sobriety, if I ever had a situation where something happened and I felt like saying I could, you know, I needed some kind of a steam blower off or whatever you want to call it, it has never been I could use a stiff drink. It has never been I could go for a cold beer. I'm going to be, and this is the thing, honest with yourself. If I am honest with myself, if I ever thought about it, the first thing that came to my mind was, I need to get, I need to get effed up. And that was the problem, not being able to find that happy medium. So I've heard different stories, you know, about all types of treatments. I did mine the old-fashioned way. I went to the meetings and the meetings worked for me. But my thing I would say to anyone else is that if you find something that works for you, the bottom line is if it works. If it works, it works. I know for me, I never wanted to test those waters again because like they teach us in nursing, you know, we always go benefit versus risk. It's more of a risk than it is a benefit for me. And so when I said I was done, I was done. I don't know. You know, maybe some people go back and they start to drink successfully. That begs me to ask the question, did you ever really have a problem in the first place? Only you know that. You know what I mean? Only they know that because everybody's relationship is different. Some people, maybe they can. I just know that I can't. And so if they can, if that's what they choose to do, I wish you the best with it. Hopefully it won't progress into something worse. But, you know, my experience with alcohol is that it was like a bad relationship. And if you've ever been in a bad relationship, you know, sometimes when people do things to hurt you, they swear they'll never do it again. And they may be good for a while. They may make good on it for a while, but eventually the truth always comes around and the ugly head gets revealed,
Yeah.
And if you think that's worth risking, you know, especially after if you've made the steps to kind of rebuild and you've gotten things under your belt, you know, I had a DUI. And luckily for me, I walked away from it unscratched. It might not be that next time. You know, if I start drinking again, I might drive off of a bridge or kill somebody else or worse. And to me, that it's not worth risking that. It's not worth risking that. I like having a car and I like not having to catch the bus all the time and, you know, having money in my pocket. So no, for me, it's not worth it. But I strive to be non-judgmental in my approach on that question. Cause some people ask me that a lot. And you know, maybe in the back of my brain, it leads me to think sometimes like, well, you know, maybe you have a problem or you know, but like I said, you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And everything in your own time, you know, it will eventually reveal itself if you need to get help. And you will know. That was something else I will always tell people. You will know. You can lie to a lot of people, but you can't lie to yourself. And you know what you feel. You know, I know what I felt when it was time for me to say, I got to put the alcohol down because I just can't take it no more. You can't lie to yourself. You will feel it. Whether it manifests as guilt, as sadness, as tears, as anger, whatever it manifests as, you will know. And when you look yourself in the mirror, you know that's where it's coming from. So, yeah. You know, like I said, to anybody that's in that situation, you know, best of luck to you. If you think you're fine, then I think you're fine too. If you like it, I love it. But like I always tell people, ask yourself the honest question. You know, you have to be honest with yourself. Be honest with yourself. You can lie to me, but you can't lie to yourself. You have to be honest with yourself. And I always use the rule, if you've ever thought that you might have a problem, I think it at least deserves a conversation with someone, or at least look into it. But don't brush it to the side, because that's when it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask you, because you mentioned before about, you know, being able to have, you still had that good support system. There were some apologies that you had to be made throughout along the journey. How did you rebuild trust, like with yourself and with others, you know, outside of the apologies? What were some ways that you made amends?
So I worked the steps of the program, and I am maybe a little skeptical about some aspects of the program, but the steps, not at all. Not at all. The steps are what actually force you to do the work. The steps are intense, and I think that they are necessary because they force you to look at yourself. They force you to look at your feelings. They force you to look at your behaviors, and they force you to document things, to write things down so you have a written record of the things that you did. It involves making amends. You need a sponsor. You definitely need a sponsor. Anybody, I think, who's struggling with alcohol, if I could tell you anything that would be beneficial, it would be make sure you get a sponsor, because a sponsor is someone who has been in your shoes and understands things the way that you understand things. And so they can give you the best advice. I think not to say the worst thing, but one thing I would not recommend is you can't take advice from somebody who doesn't have the same problem as you, because it doesn't look the same. They're not in the same mind frame. They're not in the same headspace. You know how many people told me, like, you know, try just having one drink. You know, if I could do that, you know, I would have. And I don't say it to be, you know, mean or I understand it. You know, you're not going through what I'm going through.
Right.
So you can't see things the way that I see things and feel things the way that I feel things. But my sponsor could, because he had been where I was. And so he was the best person equipped to give me advice. If I ever had a problem, I could call him up and say, hey, look, this is going on. And I think a lot of times there's a stigma that, you know, people think that I get a sponsor and it's just going to be somebody who rides my back and somebody who makes sure that I do. No, me and my sponsor were like, we was like boys, we were cool. I could call him and talk about anything. I've been to his house and had dinner. You know, his family was very welcoming and kind. And we went to meetings together, and, you know, and it felt good. It almost was like, you know, having somebody you went to the bar with. Went to meetings, and it was good to be able to open up to someone who I knew would not judge me on the things that I had did, because they had probably done things that were just as bad or worse. And it's not that it's a who did the worst competition.
Right, no.
It's somebody who understands.
A community.
It's community. And they understand that, you know, had you not had this problem, you probably wouldn't have done any of these things, but you still have to acknowledge that you did them. And you still have to make amends to people, meaning you're going to have to make a list, and you're going to have to go to people and say, hey, I apologize for A, B, and C. I'm trying to rebuild my life without alcohol. But I realized that while I was using alcohol, I hurt you in this way. And I'm sorry for it. The steps are so, so, so helpful when it comes to that. And I think people just need to, if you got a problem, give it a try. Give it a try. Like I said, you won't know if you like something unless you give it a try. Act like it's tomatoes. You know, give it a try. If you won't know if you don't like it unless you give it a try. But it is very, very, very helpful, because what I found is that when it's right down there in white and black, you can't put the blame on anybody else. You can't say you didn't do it. You can't make excuses for it. It's all right here. And it gives you a list, a goal, a set list to say, I check one off, and I check one off, and I check one off. And then before you know it, they're all done. And, you know, and be prepared that some people may not accept you after you did what you did. I've had a couple of people that were like, you know, I can appreciate what you said, but I still don't want to have anything to do with you. And that's part of the process. That's part of the process, you know, and you have to learn to accept it. But awareness of what you did, and it helps you identify triggers and places you shouldn't go and things you shouldn't do. And awareness gives you a foot up on the disease that is alcoholism. Being aware, so because sometimes you try to do things yourself and, you know, just like, you know, people use the term self-medicating. Well, how well did that go? You know, if you're not in a position to deal with things from a level head. So I definitely recommend the steps. The steps were a very, very, very big part of my sobriety. The books, because the books that they give you, you know, help you when you have questions or you need almost like case law for alcoholism. You have a question about something, you look it up, you do the research, and it gives you guidance on how you should handle that situation and what you should do. But definitely the steps, and get a sponsor. Get a sponsor. Those are the two things I can't stress enough. The steps and get a sponsor.
Okay. So now I want to get to, because you have gone through not only this metamorphosis in terms of your journey when it comes to alcohol, but even from your entire career, you know, change as well. I mean, you've gone from the dental, you know, hygiene industry, you know, dentistry into nursing. So what brought that on? And tell us a little bit about that.
So I was in dentistry for about 27 years, and I have nothing bad to say about the dental field. The dental field was good to me. I just wanted something different. And it's like I said, you know, when you clear your head and you start to see things differently, you see different types of interests. And I have realized that I had gone as far as I could go in dental. And so I decided to try something different. My original plan was to further my education in the dental field. But how do I put it? I felt like the problems that I had with the dental field weren't going to go away. With more education or a different position, it was going to be the same thing. It wasn't the work. It was more the environment. And so I thought I wanted to change. And it was at the behest of the college staff. They were the ones that said, did you try nursing? And I tried it. And it just opened up a whole new world. And I think what I liked about it so much, it was that it was something new. And so I was learning things from a whole new perspective, like from the starting blocks, excuse me. And I was able to do it, which is a good feeling. So it motivates you to want to do your best and do even more. And it was such a great, great, great change that I was happy, very happy that I did, man. Hopefully May 4th gets here fast. We can graduate and I get back to work. But yeah, but like I said, and it comes with, you know, being open-minded and not having the veil of alcoholism over your eyes. You know, a lot of times I sit back and I wonder, did I think that field was so good for me only because it allowed me to live a certain life? And, you know, that was all I could see. It was that it was allowing me to stay exactly where I was. I think that in comparison, nursing is bigger and better. And I have opportunities that await me and versatility and jobs and travel nursing and just so many different avenues. And that in itself is exciting. So nothing against the dental field. I even said when I got my RN, I might still assist for like maybe one day a week just to, you know, because I have fond memories of it. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see.
Okay, so what does now discipline look like for you now as opposed to before? What does discipline look like for you now, especially now that you have your process of completing and getting your RN license? What does discipline mean for you now?
I work the same program that I worked for the last 17, 18 years. I speak what I believe and what I want to manifest. To this day, like I said, I still say, I don't drink. I don't. I don't say I never did. I don't say I have a problem. I don't. I still speak that. I have my books from my program. I haven't talked to my sponsor some time, but I still have his number. I still do people, places, and things. Like I said, I'm in a nursing program, and a lot of times there are get-togethers and things of that nature. And even though I may not worry about myself drinking, sometimes I worry about the atmosphere because I know how things tend to get. You know my 214 rule. My 214 rule. And sometimes I know how things tend to get after a while of people, you know, being. I was telling somebody the other day, they were asking me why I did not want to go somewhere. And I said, because it's always been my experience that when you get a bunch of people together in a small confined space and it's hot and people start to drink, it can be a recipe for disaster. So I still do people, places, and things. I'm just, and I, And I don't have to cut it off altogether, and I don't, but I'm just very specific. I know my safe spaces. I know my safe spaces. I know where I am welcomed, and people will understand that I have a past of alcoholism and they will have concessions for me. And I know where nobody's going to give me a hard time if I say, look, you know, I've had about enough of this and I got to go. And nobody's going to try to force alcohol down my drink. I don't, down my throat. Nobody's going to try to slip me something and say, oh, yeah, let's see if he really has it. I don't have to worry about any of that. It comes with time. It's just like you got yourself into a pattern. You got to get yourself into another. So discipline for me these days is, like I said, just working the same program I've worked. And if it works, it works. And if it works, it works. There's no need to change anything. Discipline is just the people, places, and things, speaking it into existence. I do not drink, and knowing that I have resources. If I need them, should I find myself in a position where I'm feeling weak or tempted, I have resources. And also, you know, who you surround yourself with. Surround yourself with the type of people who want to be the type of person that you want to be. That's a very, very big part of it.
Yes. I've always, you know, been told, you know, and I've always known that if there's a certain level that you want to do, always surround yourself, like your five closest friends. They are, you know, should be, you know, kind of like where you want to be in a sense of, and surrounding yourself by people who are on different levels than what you are, you know, because then you have something to look to, or even someone to maybe ask, or, you know, surrounding yourself with people who are doing similar things, you know, and you will find that you begin to elevate, you know, as well, you know, not that you are comparing and not that way, but in a sense of, okay, it's inspiring. It's inspiring to be around people who are moving and shaking and doing things. And then you are also accomplishing your own goals. Very inspiring. And I make it a point to, you know, make sure that, you know, people that I know or friends of mine, they are actively doing something, whether they are, you know, doing something to in another career, or they're back in school, or, you know, but it's something that they have taken on, something that they are doing, starting another business, whatever it is something that they've done and that they've kept their eye on. Now, one thing I want to find out for you now, a lot of people, when it comes to dealing with addictions, they turn to faith. Was that something that was, you know, something that you felt like you had to lean on, or what is your, you know, where do you stand with that?
I say if it works for you, it works for you. I've never been an overly religious person, but we did start off every meeting with the Lord's Prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it the Serenity Prayer? I believe it was the Lord's Prayer, the Serenity Prayer. And our Father who
are... Is that the one about accepting what you cannot change?
Yes.
We started off
every meeting with that. I've never been an overly religious person, but there is a religious aspect to the program. I did not turn to faith because I was more focused with myself on getting the alcohol out of my life and keeping what I had and maintaining what I had managed to build since it had left, and trying to stay sober. So I, like I said, I got that mentality where I do something hard or I don't do it all. And a lot of times I get the tunnel vision, so I can focus on one thing at a time. And that was my primary focus. Did I go to church? No, not really. Not really. I didn't. But like I said, but if it works for other people, then it works for other people. And the meetings became my church in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I was fellowshipping with people, it goes back to what I said about people who don't share your struggle and how sometimes you may not get the best, not to say the best advice, but they may not understand because they're not going through it. The meeting became my church and my fellowship because I was surrounded by people who were going through the same thing that I was going through. And we were all openly, you know, because, and that's all a meeting. I think people have some type of bad misconception about meetings. That's all. We're sitting around, we're talking about our experience, we're talking about our lives, we're talking about our daily struggles. And how we were, most importantly, how we were thankful that even though we were going through all of these things, we didn't turn back to drinking. We found other ways to deal with them because that had been so problematic in the past. That became my church. That became my church. That became my fellowship. And I made friends there. And I can remember when I first started going and sitting in the back and being really, really quiet, and maybe they won't see me back here. And I won't forget the girl who was leading our meetings. The way she got me to share my first time, but she came up, she said, you know, we have a rule that if you've been coming here for a year and you haven't shared, you kind of have to come up and share. Jen was her name, Jen. And I remember I told somebody, after I got done, they said, that was a really good job you did, Sharon. I said, yeah, well, you know, Jen got me because it had been a year. And they said, what about a year? And I said, isn't it the rule of this meeting that you have to share?
It was no rule. She made that up.
I said, I thank her because it became so much easier to openly talk about what I was going through after that very, very, very first time. And so I thank her for that because I never probably would have done it if it wasn't for her. And that was part of the growth. That was part of the growth, not only being able to talk to your sponsor about it and maybe other people, but just being able to talk to a group of people about it. And just it gives you a feeling of relaxation. You start to feel like I'm not the only person that's going through this. And it's nothing to be embarrassed by because you're not the only person that's going through it. It's more important. Would you rather feel embarrassed or would you rather feel addicted? That's the way I looked at it. And I said, you know, I feel better talking about this. And Then I did when I was actively drinking. And so it was a good thing. It was a very, very, very good thing. Yes, the meetings became my fellowship. It wasn't a church. Well, they were held sometimes in churches, but we were in church basements or church auditoriums. But yes, so there was a little bit of a religious aspect to it. But I didn't start, you know, going to a church, you know, every Sunday or anything of that nature.
Okay. So what would you say is the one lie that addiction tells you that you had to unlearn?
There is no life without me. Definitely. Like I always say, addiction, excuse me, alcoholism, any type of addiction that you have, is always the I guess you could say the analogy that I always use is that it's like a bad relationship. You start off and everything seems fine. It may seem peaches and roses at first. People are sweet. They do nice things for you to woo you in. And then it changes on, and it changed on me like that. And it makes you start to feel like you can't remember a time when this wasn't a part of your life, even though it could happen quickly and it may be something that's very new. But the feeling of life won't be fun unless I drink. The feeling of, you know, when I go to a restaurant, the first question out of my mouth is, oh, I would love to go eat there. How much are the drinks? You know, I'm going to a party. You know, how many drinks are going to be there? Do I have to bring a bottle? What should I bring there? You know, all of those things. And that is the one, I think the one thing that really, it kind of keeps a grip on you because you get so entwined in it that you can't see life any other way. And that is the one thing. And I'm here to tell you that it's just that it's a lie. Life for me has been so much better. And I wouldn't trade what I have. And then I still have struggles. Don't get me wrong. I still have struggles. I just finished a two-year nursing program and I have forgotten how to swipe a debit card at this point because all I have been able to study, I think you still do it like this or you tap it or whatever because money has been tight. But I wouldn't trade it for actively drinking and working full time like I was before. You know, it traps you. It makes you think that you could not function without me. That's why your hands start shaking when you don't. That's always the part I tell people. I say it went from a point of shaking when I didn't drink to shaking when I did drink to shaking when I needed to drink. It turns on you. It turns on you. And then you sit there and you try to do it even more, hoping that it'll stop. And it won't. It only gets worse. It goes from your best friend to your worst enemy to I never knew you. And I'm just going to kick you when you're down. And you get so used to it that you can't see life without it. But I'm here to tell you that is a lie. That is a lie. That is a lie. I'm not a religious person, but that saying joy will come tomorrow. It's real. It's a very real thing. It's a very real thing.
It sounds like it is literally like the quintessential narcissist, it's just a toxic relationship.
Yes.
It really does. It just sounds just like that, like carbon copy.
Addiction is ugly. Addiction is very ugly. It will sneak in and hit you and jump on you when you are weak and take advantage of you. And it will make you do things that you would never consider doing, things that you would look at other people and say, how did you do? And you do it if you had to, if things got that bad. It will make you abandon your morals. It will make you embarrass yourself. It will cost you money. It will cost you opportunities. It's bad for your health. It's ugly. And you will think it's your best friend the whole time. You will think it's your best friend. Learn to find the feeling that you were chasing when you were actively using without it. And then you'll really find you. I remember the happiness I felt when I bought a car after I got my license back and I got sober the first time that I can't even remember when I had a year sober. It was like a birthday. It was like those feelings were so good because I didn't know if they would ever come back. I didn't know if they would ever come back. You know, after a while, it was just like, you know, I remember telling myself when I was getting drunk, you know, when people say, don't you ever. And I say, well, there's worse things I could be. Who says that? Like, as if because I'm not running around smoking crack and I'm just drinking my liver to death, that's any better. Like, it makes you compromise your values. Yeah, it becomes a mental thing. It becomes a mental thing. And so, yes, that I think that is the biggest thing. Never think that, you can't have fun. You can't live life and enjoy it unless alcohol is involved. That is the biggest lie since 16 CDs for a penny. There you go. That's a big lie. Never let anybody tell you anything different. That is the furthest thing from the truth. That is the furthest thing from the truth.
Well, Lewis, I am very proud of you and I'm so glad that you came on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Last question before we wrap up. If someone there's someone out there who's struggling with alcohol right now, but doesn't think that they have a real problem, what would you say to them?
I would say the same thing I said to myself. You can't lie to yourself. You can lie to everyone else, but you can't lie to yourself. If you even think that you have a problem, it deserves a conversation. Now, you can have it with yourself. You don't have to call a 1-800 number. You just sit yourself down and you look at things and you say to yourself, is this really all it's cracked up to be? And if you can't say without a shadow of a doubt, no, it's not, or yes, it is. If you can't really excuse whatever it is you're going through, then get yourself some help. Get yourself some help. And don't worry about being embarrassed. Don't worry about what people will think or what people will say, because at the end of the day, the benefit does not outweigh the risk. And you have to be honest with yourself. I'm always, like I tell people, you like it, I love it. But you gotta answer for it at the end of the day. So, if you can't be honest with yourself about, the situation that you're in, it at least deserves a conversation. And, and my prayers are with you. My prayers are with you. And should you choose to get help, I root you on. And that's what I would say.
Well, thank you so much again. So coming up next Monday, everyone, we will have someone here who is an HR professional. Her name is Tiffany Walker. She has had an illustrious career in human resources from the recruiting perspective and has worked also in not only the public sector, but the private sector as well. She'll be here to kind of give us some tips and some things to kind of look out. We'll talk about where human resources and where recruiting was before AI and now after AI. And I think this is something that we all want to be able to talk about. We'll also discover different things to do to your resume so that your resume hits those algorithms. Because if it doesn't hit those algorithms, you may not be selected. In fact, now first or initial screenings are not even done by people. They actually are now done actually by AI. Okay. You have AI recruiters who will actually do your initial screenings to weed things out before you even move on to the next select partner selection process. So stay tuned with us there. And thanks again for showing up here with Pull Up and Pour and with our guest Lewis here. And as I always say, here, come with your mocktail, your soda, your glass of wine, but more importantly, with your heart and listen to your soul. Thanks for coming.
Goodbye, thanks for having me.
Goodbye, y'all.
Well, that's today's Pull Up and Pour. Thanks for pulling up, showing up, and sharing space with us. If something resonated, don't hold it in. Share this episode, start the conversation, and come back next time with whatever's in your heart and in your glass. Because this is where we say it, sip it, and share it. And there's always room at the table. Until next time, take care, stay connected, and don't be a stranger.